and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 171, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and I'm joined this week by everyone's favourite secret ingredient. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
He only had to try this twice because I shouted bumhole at you a minute ago. And
you'll hear it in the
tracks.
Outtakes. I don't
want... Okay, good.
We don't want... Look, it's less than 30 seconds in. Do we really want to lower the tone? Like on record time,
you just interviewed a very nice lady, and I missed it because I legged it home from work.
Yeah, and hearing the way you behave now, she's probably glad that you went.
She'd be very upset with me, I'm sure. Yeah. I was really pissed off. I missed that as well, and we'll talk about it in a second.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant interview coming up, folks. And as you can hear, there's no hello. Yes, Dan.
No D-man, is it?
Yeah, D-man, the D-bomb, the big D. Doesn't that make a peanuts?
Is it? Yeah, it used to be, didn't they? Yeah. And as you pulled them off, you exposed more of a lady's breasts. Do you remember that in pubs? Maybe you're a bit old, a bit young.
Say that again. As you
pulled each packet off, one off. Yeah, you exposed more of a naked lady who was in the sign behind the different times.
Jesus.
Benny Hill was on the telly. Kenny Everett was on the radio. Different times.
Bloody hell! Most of our listeners probably don't know those times.
No, they don't, do they?
Well, no. Yeah. And neither will the alien race that are listening to this 100 years in the future. but no, as we say, Dan Butcher couldn't be with us tonight.
No.
So we miss you, Dan.
We miss him.
We love you. And
he sent me a picture of a man's ball earlier.
Oh, yeah. Why? What is it with you two?
I don't know. I was just trying to cheer you up. You sounded a bit down. And I thought send you some pictures of some things, cheer you up.
Literally some things. I don't want that. Come on.
What do you want pictures of then? Me?
Yeah, always.
I'm meeting Joe next weekend.
Yes. Yes.
I miss her.
Yes. And she misses you, Tony.
She pretends she hates me. It's a little game we play where she never replies to any messages I sent her, and she just sends me emoji poos back. But she's my friend, really. I know she is.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. And we'll talk more about that after the interview.
Yes.
But it's an interview that unfortunately Tony couldn't be with us.
No, it's just you. Yeah. Look, you're all grown up.
I know. I had to become a journalist.
He texted me earlier, I'm going to have to be all serious.
I know I never. No, although, like, I had to be proper on the ball with the questions and everything, which I think I did all right. Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it because we've been talking about that book for ages, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah.
We love that book.
Yes. Yeah. And we're talking about Follow Me In by Katrina Chapman, which we're big fans of. And she joined us for a chat, which you're going to hear very shortly.
Yeah,
but do you know what they're going to hear first, Tony?
Is it a really shit advert from us about Comic House?
It is indeed. ComicHouse.com. Yes, they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference, which is now become my staple. It's almost like Netflix for comics. So there's two things I say every week, and it's the indie market.
Stop talking, Tony. I'm trying to do the intro. That's one of them.
Every time.
Three things I say.
Yeah. Shut up, Tony. That needs to come back. It's making a comeback. It's been here for years. Never went away. Much like Comic House, they're still with us. And there's huge selection of titles on their database on comichouse.com. So if you self-publish your comics, then you can list your book on their site for free. When you sell a copy, they only take 1p commission, which is brilliant. And also, if you like to get digital comics out in the world, so many more digital comics flying here, there, and everywhere, which is brilliant. But Comic House has a ton on their very own app, which is, like I said, Netflix for comics.
Got that app.
It's a good app, isn't it? It's amazing.
It is. I mean, I was looking at it earlier.
I like to give it a sort of couple of weeks sort of gap in between reading because they're updating titles all the time, aren't they? So there's usually a bundle that I can just burn through. So, and it's only £3 a month. You get access to an enormous library of digital comics. I mean, what stuff is on there at the moment, Tony?
Well, funny as you mention that, I've been looking to see what stuff was on there.
Sorry. It's just as funny when you try to be professional. I don't
know. I know. And fail. The Eponymous, that looks good. Monster Kids, Volume 1. Guillotine, that's about a pig. That's a detective thing. There's loads of Red Sonja on there. In fact, there's loads of Dynamite on there, which I really like, Dynamite. I think they're like the fifth biggest company at the moment, but they put some great books out, do some great Red Sonja books. Our friend Rick Jackson has Rockin' Purgatory is on there. That's well worth a look. He's a good lad.
Yeah.
And Aliens Vampirella, which I read in issues about a year ago, I suppose, by Karim Bechko and Javier Garcia Miranda. And that is a cracking book. So Vampirella and some space people land on a planet full of aliens. Brilliant, it is. Really worth a look.
Nice.
Yeah. There you go.
Blimey. So that and so much more is on there. So if you want to find out more, start a 14-day free trial. And to dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press that we talk about every week, then go to comichouse.com. There you go.
Fuck me. That's probably our best ever advert.
Yeah, maybe. I think so. Yeah. I think we did
all
right.
Do you remember in the old days when we first started and we used to do the advert for another podcast that Chris Wildgoose was on?
Yeah.
And it used to involve me saying that I'd nailed my cock to a lump of wood. Do you remember those adverts?
I remember when we used to be in some ways sort of, I don't know, decent.
The only time I'm decent is when I'm asleep.
You are never decent. I've seen where you sleep. That bridge is filthy.
You've watched me sleep. I slept in front of you once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Under you.
I've got a whole folder on my phone full of photos.
I wore pyjamas. Normally I sleep naked, but you wouldn't let me that night.
Don't call that see-through plastic bag a pair of pyjamas, because it clearly
was. It was from Tesco's.
Doesn't matter. Transparent, still transparent. That's all I've got to say.
Ginger German Shepherd. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, my God.
You know what
God.
I mean?
Yeah. You should write a comic about that one day.
Right, we've been made guests at a convention again, we heard today, and I'm having the room on my own. I'm going to bagsy that right now. My turn. I'm the elder statesman of the podcast. I'd like to point that out at 33. So I think I deserve a room on my own.
Do you want a ground floor room, do you?
Yeah. Can I have one of those ones with the seat in the shower?
Yeah, yeah. The one nearest the buffet.
I can just mess myself in it and no one will blame me.
Oh, God. Yeah, the exciting.
Going away with Lambo once, and he had a room, and he got they got the one with the seat in the shower. He was very impressed. He said he could do what he liked in his room. Then, good man.
Episode 171 is where that friendship dies. So, but it's also the episode where we have a fantastic interview for you.
Yes.
Yes, we're going to stop all on nonsense now. You can listen to that after the interview.
You've gone uber serious. Yeah. You're like into the actor's studio.
No, not that serious, actually. When you listen to it, it's still the same nonsense.
I'm so jealous because I'm in a hotel again today. I'm always in hotels. I've run back to a hotel in order to get on to record the rest of this episode because I wasn't going to be here because Dan's missus isn't very well, very sad. Get well soon, Dan.
Yes.
And I managed to miss the interview by about 1 minute, literally.
Yeah.
Just as I messaged you, say, I'm on, call me in. You said, I'm just finishing. I don't know what you meant by that, but, you know.
I didn't say, that didn't sound sad when I said it. I just said I was just finishing the chat. Oh. That's the thing is, you can't tell tone from text, can you?
That's true. That was those emojis that made it, though.
Yeah. You're an animal.
No, because she's a nice lady. Don't be horrible. And it's a really good book, actually, as well. It's me and you both agree, book of the year.
Yeah.
One of the best books this year,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yes. A lot of our listeners will know about the book Follow Me In from Avery Hill Publishing. And, created by Katrina Chapman. We love the book. We want to find out more about the book. So, and she was very kind and gracious to join us this week and talk to me without Tony distracting me with his inane comments.
You mean?
No, she was a great guest, and it's a fantastic interview. We talk about art, we talk about the book itself, what's coming in the future. Brilliant stuff. So stop listening to our waffle and listen to the interview now. Okay, I'm two hosts down, but that's all right, because right now I'm joined by an illustrator and comic creator behind the brilliant Cat Zine, which I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with, and the magnificent Follow Me In, which is published by Avery Hill Publishing. Yes, I'm joined by Katrina Chapman. Hello.
Hi, Vince.
Hello. No one will know that we've been talking about 5-10 minutes before this, but, you know.
No.
thank you for joining us this week. I know you've just come back from a trip to France, So I mean, by Follow Me In, which is quite a personal book, but it's also a travel book. Do you like traveling a lot?
I do. Yeah, yeah, I do. I think it comes up in Catzine quite often as well. Yeah, I really do. I like just having little breaks away from, you know, your usual routine and just seeing something completely new. So I find that kind of invigorating, and it usually inspires me to make work and stuff. So
I'm guessing when you go anywhere, you take a sketchbook with you.
I do, yeah. I don't always sketch.
I was wondering about this, because sometimes, like, whenever I go on some sort of trip, I take a little notepad or a notebook or a sketchbook and a pencil. And if I'm honest, very rarely does that get used. And I always think I should more. But what inspires you to actually sort of bust out the sort of sketchbook and stuff?
Well, I think it is tricky if it's a holiday and you want to relax. To me, kind of drawing is work, and I don't find it that relaxing.
Yeah.
So if I'm on holiday and I really want it to be a relaxing trip, I don't usually draw. I might do like one or two little sketches, but it also depends how long the trip is. If it's a longer trip, then I'll find more time to do bits. But if it's only a couple of days, I'm not going to spend all my time.
When that's your
kind of day job as well, it's a bit much.
Yeah, it's distinguishing the sort of the day job from the sort of relaxation, isn't it? It's like when people are drawing all the time, surely they don't want to go home and do more drawing, or, you know.
Yeah, some people seem to do that though. Some people seem to just doodle and kind of draw all the time, but for me it's always more of an effort.
Well, you wouldn't know it looking at your Inktober. Your Inktober's like, it's amazing. I mean, what do you do with your, is it digital, is it original? I mean, how do you do that? I mean, those Inktobers in particular, how do you do those?
I was just gonna get onto that, because on this little trip to France I've just got back from, I did draw, I'm drawing every day at the moment because I made the decision to do Inktober. to get back into drawing, because the book came out, well, I finished drawing the book in June, I think, and since then it's all been promo work and things and Avery Hill work, and so I haven't really done a lot of art. So I thought I'll do Inktober. It's come at the right time to get me back into drawing. And also, I've got a brand new iPad Pro with the Procreate software, and I wanted to have something that would prompt me to kind of practice with that and get used to that new thing. Because I mean, I haven't done a lot of digital drawing. I colour in Photoshop, but I haven't done a lot of drawing on a screen. And I really like the Apple Pencil. It's really good. But I thought if I was forced to do a little comic a day for Inktober, then that would help me get used to the programme and figure it out.
But what you've said there, you said a little comic a day. Some people just do an ink sketch or something like that. But you are actually putting like notes with it.
Everyone does their own thing. I think officially you're supposed to follow the prompts, aren't you? But I'm never that good at that kind of thing, like that kind of conceptual illustration where you get a word and you have to come up with something really clever.
Yeah.
So I just thought, all right, I won't do that. I'll do what I enjoy instead.
Yeah, why not? I mean, as long as you're doing something, that's the whole point of it really, isn't it? Just to get people drawing. I wish I had the patience or willpower to do it.
But the other thing about the iPad is that I've found it really fun to draw on, especially for being when you're traveling, because sitting on a train or something, because I work in pencil, I often need a pencil, an eraser, a pencil sharpener, and then you're often like, you lose one of them and it falls on the floor.
Do you have like one of those small metal pencil sharpeners that can quite easily get lost?
Yeah. When you've got the iPad, you've just got the pencil and that's it, and you can quite comfortably sit on a train and kind of work.
Would you say, do you think that's going to change the way you work sort of moving forward then?
It might do. Yeah, it's still, I'm not sure really at the moment. Also recently, the book that came out, I've got a cough at the moment. The book that came out from Avery Hill at the same time as mine, Kristina Bezinski's Retrograde Orbit, she drew that entire book using Procreate.
Really?
Yeah, that was another thing that inspired me to give it a go, because I love her artwork.
Yeah,
she didn't colour it in. I think she coloured it in Photoshop, if I remember rightly. Mm. But yeah, I just looking at her work, I thought I've got to give that a try. And also, I just had this feeling that it would help with things like that, being on the road or being, you know, not in my studio.
Yeah.
Have a really easy way to draw, and it's all clean, and it's kind of, you don't have to worry about smudging it, or, and then you can also post it to the internet immediately. It's kind of ready to go.
Yeah. I guess if you're working on a bigger project, you can just upload it to a Google Drive or whatever hosting service. So you've got a backup, haven't you, of everything.
Yeah, it's quite convenient. I quite like it so far.
I mean, I would love to get one. I've been talking to more and more artists who are using these, you know, the iPad Pros and stuff. And for me, like, that is would be better to try out than like a Cintiq. I mean, I always used to think that the Cintiq was the one I eventually wanted. That was the dream goal, to have this big screen that you can just draw. Because I don't know, some people work digitally with just like, I don't know, like a mat and a pen, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I need to be able to press the pencil or pen against something. I've got to feel like I'm in contact with it in some way and look directly at it. I mean, I marvel at anyone that can look down and look up at a screen, you know, just
I find that crazy. I did occasionally try Cintiqs and things like that and tablets and things before this one came along, and I could never get my head around it. But yeah, this is very good, and it does have that, it's pressure sensitive, and it just feels like drawing on paper, except that it's kind of smoother.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's work completely traditional media.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of scanning and kind of around.
Yeah. And I normally do my comic pages like 11x17. And I have been known to mess up a panel and then draw that panel separately and replace it in Photoshop. And normally it's one of those things where you're happy with the pencils, you put a bit of ink on it, and all of a sudden you've ruined it. I've heard of Martin Simmons mentioned, because he uses an iPad Pro for a lot of his work, and he's got a sort of cover over the screen that makes it feel like paper. Have you heard about
that? Oh wow, no. No, I didn't hear about that.
It makes it even... I'll see if I can find a link and put it in the show notes, folks. But I think it was a Kickstarter where people that, even though they've got iPads and the like, there's still that... It's a little too smooth for people, you know. There's a little bit of a disconnect. So I think it's a very thin sort of sheen that goes over the screen. It doesn't interfere with anything. But it does have that sort of papery sort of texture feel, so it feels like you're still drawing on paper.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So...
good.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find out about that. I mean, Lord knows what it costs. It's all expensive, isn't it? Brilliant. Another creator that I can mine their brain for Procreate tips. Did you actually look at any tutorials or anything like that before you actually sort of started it or even bought the iPad itself?
One or two, but I think you have to just kind of throw yourself in and start. And it's very similar. It's set up very similar to Photoshop, so if you're familiar with that, it's not too, there's still stuff that I'm discovering now and thinking, why on earth have I only just found this?
But that's good, that's what we all want, isn't it? You know, you should always be discovering some new way to make your life easier.
I'm really liking it. And another thing that I'm finding interesting is that I've got the world's worst handwriting. It's really messy, and that's why I had my handwriting kind of made into a font for doing comics so that I wouldn't have to hand letter everything. But I'm finding it's actually kind of nice to write on the iPad screen because it's really smooth. I find it quite... If you kind of mess up a word, you can just undo and write it again same spot. Whereas if I'm doing it on paper, it's kind of like a huge mess, and then I'm trying to cut and paste bits over the top of other bits.
Does that make the perfectionist in you even worse, though?
A little bit.
Yeah, that's the danger of it. The control Z can be like a blessing and a curse, really. So your handwriting is an actual font. Is this the one that was used in Follow Me In and all your other
ones?
Yes. Wow.
That's a font because I just couldn't have... It would have added months to occasionally when I've really wanted it to look hand lettered for the zine, I've done a little bit of hand lettering, and it takes forever because, as I say, I'll write one word and think that's illegible, I'll write it again and again, and then when I scan it I have to kind of copy and paste that word back over in the space where it's just like a nightmare. So
It's such a nice font. I was actually gonna you're actually telegraphing all of my questions before I can even get to it.
Sorry about that.
So the next half hour will just be like, I don't know, humming songs. I don't know.
Silence.
Yeah, just be silence going, are you all right? Yeah, that's fascinating. So how did you go about making your own font, though? Because obviously you want to get every letter right, so I'm guessing you did 1,000 J's, 1,000 Q's and all of this. You had to do upper and lower case. But how did you then turn that, what was the process of like making your own font for comics?
Well, yeah. Was it
painful?
No, because I paid someone to do it for me. Because you can use these programs where you can do it yourself online, and I tried one, and it, unsurprisingly, it didn't look fantastic because it was a free program.
Yeah.
And it just didn't look like my writing. It looked kind of weird. But I had heard that Dan Berry, I don't know if you know Dan, that he makes fonts sometimes for people. So I just dropped him a line and asked if he could do that. And it was the same process. I just had to write each letter a few times and stuff. But then he did all the clever bit of making it work.
Yeah.
And it is quite, once you get into it, it's quite complicated to make it look really good. You have to have a few variations.
And it has to look natural, doesn't it? Especially if it's a handwritten font. It's got to look like it's not just typed out all the time.
Oh, so yeah, it's clever how he does it. I can't begin to understand how he does it, but
I mean, he's a jack of all trades anyway, and Danny makes some comics, and he's got his podcast, Make It Then Tell Everybody. Is that the one?
Yeah, he does all sorts.
So yeah, that's another name for the show notes. Yeah, but that must, I mean, getting the book backs, this is going to sound strange, but this is coming from a designer's perspective or anyone that loves print media, etc. Getting a printed book back is one thing. But seeing your own font, what did that feel like for the first time when you saw it all and it worked?
That was very strange. he sent me a few paragraphs of text in the font, and I was just staring at it going, that's weird, because it looks just like I've written that and I know I haven't. But that's a sign of how good it was, because it just looked exactly right.
Yeah. So when did you get this done then? Did you get it done specifically for Follow Me In, or was it long before?
I did it a little bit before then. I think I had it in mind that I would need it for this book, because the book is, Follow Me In is 240 something pages, 48 or something.
Yeah.
And I just knew I couldn't hand letter all of that. It would have been torture.
Yeah.
So, but oh, I've used it for all of the zines as well.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
I just, I'm not that fast making comics anyway. I think most people that make comics always wish that they could work faster, and I thought if that's one major thing that will help me speed up, I should work it out.
Yeah, especially if you're a sort of one man band, as it were. You're because the book is literally all you, isn't it, essentially? I was looking at the sort of credits thinking, all right, where's everyone else? Oh no, she's done it all herself. Which is amazing, and quite a feat, so good on you.
I had the help of Ricky from Avery Hill with the editing of the story and stuff. He was brilliant. Because Avery Hill, it's about 99% creators that write and draw their own stuff. That means that you end up designing the whole book yourself as well. It's not like a big publisher where you might send the artwork off and someone else puts it all together. To do everything yourself
and then give them the files and just sort of say, here it is, here's the finished piece, go ahead and make it wonderful and print it. But that's a nice time to talk about Follow Me In, obviously. I mean, and we, trust me, I could talk about artwork processes and steal all your ideas for the whole show, but anyone who's read the book will know that it's very much a sort of personal and autobiographical piece of work, and I know since it's been out, a lot of the people who listen to this show, and likewise a lot of chatter about it, you've had some successful launches, etc. But for those who actually don't know, could you tell us just a little bit about what Follow Me In is actually about?
It's a travelogue, and it's sort of autobiographical. It's the story of a trip I did around Mexico and Central America when I was, I think, 24. And it only covers the Mexico part of the trip, because initially I was unsure like how much of it to try and cram into one book.
Yeah.
And I think we decided in the end, let's focus on Mexico, and it can be, you know, that's a nice way to do it. But yeah, it's also got, we also didn't want it to be, I wanted to write about the country, because I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
But I didn't want it to be like a, you know, a boring kind of dry kind of document about, you know, factual things.
Yeah.
And it's quite hard writing about personal stuff. It tells the story of a relationship that was sort of going on at the time. I traveled with an ex-partner who was an alcoholic. And so it kind of tells the story of that and me throughout the trip, my characters trying to figure out how to deal with the whole situation. And I just decided, the more I was looking at how to tell the story, the more I thought that'll be a really important part to keep in there, to give the reader something to kind of latch onto that'll make you want to keep reading, and that'll make the whole story more human, so that it's not just reading facts about Mexico.
Yeah. Although, you know, that's one of the things I loved about it. I'm not a huge reader of like autobiographical kind of books. They need, you know, for me personally, they need something to sort of hook me in. This has so much going on in it. You know, it's part autobiographical story. It's very personal. It's also, you've got a travel book in there. You could, there are spreads. You can have a 40-page book about Mexico, which is fascinating. talking about the places you go. You know, there was something to sort of break it up. You know, there was a certain, there's a rhythm to the book, isn't there? You have certain, there's these chapters as you're taking the journey, and like the information about sort of the areas you visited. And you say this is like, what year was this?
I was there 2003, 2004.
And yet everything is, you know, did you have lots of notebooks of it? Because everything feels so fresh. Like it could have been like last summer when I was reading it, you know, it feels, and I mean, I have a mind like a sieve. So you must have a mind like a steel trap, because everything
No, I have a mind like a sieve as well. But I did, when we were traveling, because it was such a huge thing in our lives at the time, we decided to keep journals as we went. And it's the only time in my life I've ever done that. But we just wanted to, because we were seeing so much that was so new and interesting, we wanted to write it all down and so we could remember. And thank God, because it was, you know, a long time ago now, I wouldn't have been able to do it, I don't think, without that. So, yeah, I started by going back over all my notes from the time.
Were they sort of shorthand notes that then just evoked a sort of memory that just became so vivid that you knew how to write it?
It does, yeah. I mean, it was full kind of like diary entries, because we travelled for such a long period, for 9 months. There was a lot of time of just sitting around, you know, killing time when we were kind of, you know, in a place for a few days. So we would... Yeah.
And you didn't, it's not like you had lots of stuff with you, did you? One of my favourite spreads is just like, it's almost the diagram of the things that you took on you on the trip. Which a belt you can hide money in. I mean, that's amazing. What, you like James Bond?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could get those.
they're great. Because you do worry. You think, what if I get stranded somewhere? I mean, these days it's not quite so much, you know, I think technology's so much better now, but then the thought of just being stranded if you lost all your cards and
but even your planning was just very sensible, to the point of like, you didn't want to take MP3 players with you, you took old school sort of Walkmans with batteries, you know. I just love that, you know, the whole planning of the trip. But so I knew then that you didn't have lots of distractions, you're in this wonderful country and seeing all these different things, but there's plenty of time to make notes and make sketches and things like that.
I mean, there is a lot of, if you're traveling, if you're backpacking like that, there's a lot of time to wait around, either waiting for buses or I mean there's parts of, like, I remember the last time I was in Mexico, I went to the coast and it pretty much got dark at 6 p.m like really fast every night.
Yeah.
At that point, because I don't really go clubbing, not into nightlife particularly. At that point, it was you're just sort of in your hotel room thinking, what do I do? So keeping a journal was a way to just pass the time a lot of the time, but it was also really helpful when I was looking back on it.
Yeah, And like also as well as the like I guess the journal, you had the sketchbooks because you had not drawn for like 5 years before.
Yeah, that's right. I did art A level, and then I got thoroughly sick of it, and I didn't know where it was going to lead or anything. I had no idea, so I then just stopped for a while. I did a degree in something else, and then I was just floundering a bit, which is at the point where we took the trip. So that was something I tried to bring into the story as well.
Yeah,
it was me at a certain point that everyone goes through, I think, when they're young, where they just don't know what on earth they're doing.
At the crossroads and deciding sort of what you want to do. And you do really do get the sense of you finding the passion for drawing again and the sketches. Now, I have to ask, there are pages in this book that are like sketches, you reference where you are and then you see a page that is it an original sketch?
Yeah, all the sketchbook pages are just scanned out of my actual sketchbook from the time.
I mean, one, the sketches are fabulous. I mean, considering like you hadn't drawn for 5 years, you haven't missed a beat. But also, your scanner's really good because they just look, it just fits so well into the book, and how crisp they are. Were there any sketches that you lost or you wanted to use that you couldn't use?
I mean, yeah, there weren't any that I sort of lost. It was always weighing up with this book because there was so much that could have gone into it. Mm. It was always trying to keep it manageable and deciding what to cut and what to include. So I did want some pages from the sketchbook throughout, but I didn't want too many because it would have just been, I didn't want the book to reach a ridiculous size where it, it would be out of people's price range to buy it.
But I mean,
it was always just
it's still 240 plus pages, isn't it?
And that was us trying to keep it, as minimal as possible. But I mean, I would have loved to have stuck quite a few pages in there, but I just thought, just choose them judiciously.
I mean, to know that there was even more than what's in a 240-plus page book. There's a lot of people thinking, Jesus, you're making a lot of people feel very lazy at this moment in time.
Also, I just thought of something. If anyone's interested in seeing the whole sketchbook, I made a little film of it and put it on YouTube.
Oh, brilliant!
I think people can just search my name on YouTube, and then it's just a film of me flipping through that sketchbook from Mexico and talking about each of the drawings.
Oh, that's amazing! We'll put
if anyone is that interested. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure anyone who's read this book or is going to read this book is going to want to see more of those sketches. So I'll put a link in the show notes for listeners. It fascinated me how seamless everything sort of fit together and flowed together. So there must have been a lot of planning for this.
Yeah,
book.
I did. I wrote it out as a script initially because I really wanted Ricky from Avery Hill's help an editor, and he was really into the project from the beginning, so that was good. But I wanted to just write it so that he could read it as a sort of almost like a film screenplay to just visualize how it was going to be, and then we could sort of iron out most of the writing stuff, the storytelling stuff, without me having to draw bits and then cut them later, because I didn't want to be wasting my time kind of going, spending ages drawing a page and then us going, no, we won't include that section after all.
Yeah.
I know some people really like to do the visual stuff at the same time, but I'm quite a slow drawer, and I just thought I want to get the story down before I start drawing.
So you knew what page count you were going for from the get-go, that, did you just write it and then whatever you had at the end, that's how many pages this book's going to be?
Pretty much, yeah. And we did go through it, an editing process where we would try, and Ricky would say, this section's long, try and cut two pages or something. And so we were always trying not to let it get too out of hand.
with that in mind, what was the page count for the first draft?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know. We didn't cut massive quantities, but there were also the pages, I always just called them fact pages, but the little pages about Mexico that are kind of scattered throughout the story, those were ones where we could kind of look at them separately and weigh up which ones we want to include. And there were ideas that ended up, getting cut and things. But it was just stuff like that. We looked at those and decided which ones to include. And then there were certain, like I said, sections of the narrative where he would be like, this whole section that happens in this one city is way longer than the others, so maybe try and condense that down. And then there were a couple of places where he said to add in a page or two as well. So, but it's really nice to hear that you feel like it all works, because my main worry starting out was the balancing of those different elements.
Yeah.
That sort of narrative personal bits and then the fact bits and then the sketches. I mean, part of me and Ricky were kind of saying to each other, is it going to be coherent or is it just going to be a big kind of mess?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's the balancing act, isn't it? You know, when you've got, there's so much going on, you've got quite a personal story, yet you want to talk about the country itself. I mean, I've learned more about Mexico from this book than I have in years. But
as you said, it kind of, so each bit kind of acts like a little break from the other bit. So you kind of have a pause and go to something else and then kind of come back to...
They're almost like chapter breaks, aren't they?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And that was always the sort of plan, to sort of like, well, I have this section and then a little couple of pages about Mexico. You know, it's almost like your chapter pages, aren't they? Those Mexico information pages. Was that always your plan from day one?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, as I started, because doing autobio stuff and revealing personal stuff is kind of weird. And when I started, at first I thought, can I just write about Mexico without putting anything about myself in it?
Yeah.
And then I thought, no, that's kind of silly and that'll be boring. And also, I think at one point Ricky said a line that was quite helpful to me. He said something like, we don't want it to be something where people could have just gone on Wikipedia and found this information out for themselves anyway.
Yeah.
It has to be kind of channeled through your voice and your story. So then I kind of realized as well, if I wanted it to be something engaging, that people would keep turning the page.
But... And he's absolutely right. I mean, that once again showcases the importance of an editor sort of looking at it, and because he's looking at it from the reader's sort of perspective, isn't it? Which I guess a lot of creators are sort of too deep in the trench of what their work is to see how other people are going to read it. But I totally, it has a voice to it that, you know, which is quite sort of, it's a very sort of chatty sort of way of getting information across, which just works brilliantly. I mean, I like when you're talking about what you're eating, just those moments you're like, you're a vegetarian. Am I right? Are you a vegetarian now?
I was at the time.
You were at the time.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that you just, because your circumstances and the travel, you couldn't really afford to have that sort of luxury, as it were, to be a vegetarian, which, you know, that's, makes it so much clearer to me than like trying to plan out, you know, trying to like a diagram or like a sort of textbook way of saying it. The way you sort of communicate that information was like, I completely got it. I completely understood, you know, how it would be quite difficult in those circumstances to still be a vegetarian if you haven't, you know, if you don't have the luxury of it. So, I mean, you must have had just loads of notes just on the food alone.
my partner helped me with the food stuff a little bit because he's from Mexico. So when it came to some of the food bits, I did consult him on quite a lot, especially the Spanish language bits.
This is another thing I wondered, because there are large bits of the dialogue that are in the Spanish language and they're not translated, because obviously you didn't understand it at the time or other people are talking in it. Are you fluent in Spanish now? Are you better with the Spanish language?
I'm not good at it. No. I talk about my shortcomings in the book a little bit about, I think when you're traveling, you get good at certain very narrow topics like food and things like that. And then if you're not having regular conversational practice with people, you just don't get good at, you know, other stuff like grammar and things. I still haven't got good at it, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and you have that wonderful moment where you get a certain confidence to say something in Spanish and you talk to someone and they do a reply that you just do not understand. Where do you go from there? You just sort of shrug your shoulders like, all right, and then walk away embarrassed, you know. And me personally, I mean, I'm terrible with languages. I can barely speak English. Anyone who listens to this show will know that. So it's just very clear and very, you know, through the whole book, I think your narration and the way the characters flow through the story. It's weird calling them characters because I know that it's autobiographical. Did you have to separate yourself from the story in the book, especially since it's so personal?
I did. I mean, I found it helpful to just, at a certain point, I just didn't even think of it as being about me. I was just kind of like, you know, this is what the character's going to do at this point.
Did you hesitate to sort of go forward with this book?
No. I didn't really hesitate. I've wanted to do this book since the trip happened years and years and years ago. So I always wanted to do it. I did go back and forth on exactly how to do it. And it's strange writing about real people. And I do include a bit at the start of the book where I talk about how I sort of consulted with my ex-partner a little bit, saying, you know, I'm going to be doing this.
That was a very interesting, that was a beginning to a book that I didn't expect it to start there, you know, so immediately. But it sets you up for, you know, the relationship that you have with him now.
Yeah, I was hoping that would put the reader at ease and not think, oh, this is going to be a hatchet job on this guy's character. He's got no say in it and all the rest of it. I just wanted to include something to show that I was sensitive to that a little bit.
Yeah, and that you were both sort of, you're in your own spaces now, aren't you? You know, time has passed, but I mean, there's still a sort of feeling of awkwardness, I guess, that you had at that time.
Yeah.
I did notice that the colour sort of palette for that, I mean, it's probably because it's England as well. It's slightly more washed out on those two pages. So as soon as you go to Mexico, just the swatch just completely opens up, doesn't it? Was that definitely an intent sort of purpose for a storytelling sort of way of using color?
I wanted the color palette to vary depending on the locations, even within Mexico. I mean, there's the north of Mexico is very dry and deserty, and the south is very jungly, so I knew that different bits of it would have quite different feels color-wise. But also there's a little section that's in Amsterdam, which is where I was living before this trip happened, and then there's a section in London, and I just knew that, you know, I thought I'll set the Amsterdam bit in the middle of winter so that it's a real contrast. I always wanted each location to have a different color palette.
I mean, it's such a colourful book as well. I think it has to be with Mexico though, doesn't it? Surely. I mean,
yeah.
it seems like such a colourful sort of country. I mean, it works well as a travel book. I mean, I'd like to see so much of this stuff that you guys have seen. I know a lot of it was off the beaten path, to put it bluntly, you know, put it politely. I did look at some panels and just thought, they're in like this ancient place that, you know, there are murals on the wall, so colourful, no one else is there. How did they manage this? You know, did those experiences actually happen, that you went to these ancient places and no one else was there?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we learned through the course of the trip, was that it was more interesting the further you got away from other tourists.
I mean, certainly, you brought up Chichen Itza, and I used to work as a designer for a travel company, so I knew all about Chichen Itza, and you see the people lining up in front of those pyramids and stuff, and it looks, there's tourists everywhere.
Yeah. You
know, was that such a completely different experience to the rest of Mexico?
Well, it does. It just depends where you go. There's a very clear tourist path around different parts of Mexico. And yeah, depending on which region, different kinds of tourism. But we started out going kind of from city to city, and pretty quickly we were kind of like, well, a lot of cities are quite similar to each other. And we started to go more into the countryside. And it was part of the sort of discovery we made on the course of the trip, was that the more you go off into these odd little places, the more interesting things are going to be. That was a definite thing that we learned, was to try and get away from other tourists. Challenging. I hope that came across in the book, that there are times where we were kind of running out of money and not sure whether we'd be able to make it to certain places or not, and not sure if you know, some places you have to take a boat, and not sure if that's going to work out.
Yeah, and but, like, and you're on buses for like 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours at a time.
Yeah,
you know, and just some of the travel, I just thought, God, bloody hell, you must have had like backache or leg ache or whatever. You know, so many long journeys that I think sometimes people take for granted when they have like a 2 or 3 hour bus journey to and from London or etc.
Yes,
and it's completely different terrain. I remember one scene in the book where you're going quite a bumpy road. I think, which you didn't expect to be as bumpy as it was. There was it an American, was it an American guy that you met on the bus who had been there a couple of times?
Yeah.
And yeah, that seemed like an arduous bus trip.
Yeah, that's quite a well-known road through the mountains from the city of Oaxaca down to the coast there, and it's very, very windy.
Yeah.
And but most
you didn't know that. Yeah, did you know that going into it?
No. We didn't know much about anything going into things on that trip, but yeah. It's not the way I would travel now that I'm old. I wouldn't do that kind of crazy backpacking thing now, but at the time it was the right time to do it when I had the energy. But it was, yeah, a fully physical kind of exhausting thing. Carrying those packs every few days was, you know, workout in itself.
Yeah. And the walking, there was an awful lot of walking. You know, even to the point of planning out when you walk 6 kilometers in one direction and you know that, you know, you'll have to get a bus back because your feet just couldn't stand it anymore.
Yeah. And we were always kind of on a budget too. So it was always weighing up how to save money, but also how to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as well as, you know, the exhaustion of all of that, I mean, from the book itself, and it's very, very subtly and very well handled that it was an exhausting emotional time for you as well. Were there some parts of the book that were harder to work on than others? I mean, you don't have to go into any details, but, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with stuff that, you know, memories that are quite hard at the time, did you have to like take a step away from some pages and just be like, I can't do that now, I'm going to have to come back to it at another point?
There's a few pages that are kind of, yeah, that are a bit challenging like that. Nothing where I really couldn't, you know, it was hard for me to do, to draw. Because it's so far in the past now. It was like 2003.
Yeah.
So I have that much distance from it where it doesn't really affect me much anymore. But yeah, there's a few pages that are quite sad. but I think if it had been closer to the time, that would have been harder.
Mm. Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I can get that, and I'm guessing a book like this, in every aspect, whether it be personal or just the artwork or everything, it must have been a case of when the time is right. Because you've been working on Cat Zine, and you know you're doing a lot of work with Avery Hill and stuff. You know, how long has this book kind of like? When did you plan to begin it? Because it's also 240 pages, so I'm guessing it's been quite a few years you've been planning.
Yeah. It has been, and it's hard to remember exactly when I started, because also I've kind of made little stabs at it over the years of how would I do this even when I decide to do it. And then I've drawn, you know, at one point I was starting to plan out some pages before I really got back into comics. I was trying to plan out a few pages and things, and it was all very bad. And because I didn't really know how to approach it, and I would just read a section of my diary from the time and then try and draw it as it was written, and then kind of looking at it, I was going, this book would end up being thousands of pages because I'm going to have to be quite careful about how I choose what aspects to tell and what to leave out. But before I mean this time round with Avery Hill's support, it was a good 3 years ago, I think, when I sat down with Ricky and decided to start working on the script. But I also did a couple of years of just making Cat Zine, getting the practice of doing comics, because I hadn't really done a lot before. And my experience of trying to rough out those early pages as a kind of test was that I needed to get better at comics storytelling. I did lots of work on the Cat Zines as I was kind of working on the script, which was just sitting typing on a laptop. I did all the Cat Zines to try and get my storytelling better.
Did you have to fight the urge to start this sooner rather than later, or did you always, you know, because some projects you're working on it and you just want to draw it straight away. Do you know what I mean? You have this enthusiasm. Yeah. But did you never have that with this story? It was like, no, I'm going to do this script, get the script perfect first.
I didn't want that thing, like I said before, of drawing a bunch of pages and then we that's going in the edit and it's being cut. So I was quite happy just to type it all out first.
Yeah.
And also I just wanted to get my head around it, because also we decided to do a non-linear kind of narrative where it would jump in time a little bit.
Yeah.
So to work all that stuff out before doing any drawing was quite important.
Yeah, and it's definitely the sort of journey that you take is how long were you in Mexico for?
Mexico 6 months, and then I spent another 3 months going through Central America, which none of that's in this book at all.
I'm guessing that's not going to be a follow-up book. Are you done with it? Because Pete, you must have had this question before, to sort of say, was that the end of your trip? And as soon as you say, well, no, there was another few months, people immediately are going to want another book.
Well, I did want to do another book initially, but Ricky sort of said the way that we've told the story through this one book is kind of, that's it. I think it's like it's hard with autobio stuff to have a sort of feeling of a conclusion at the end of a story, because life doesn't just stop, it kind of goes on.
But we
kind of wanted the book to feel like there was an ending. And I think it would be weird to go back and then tack on another 3 months of the same.
Yeah. because the ending of the book is very much a new beginning of a next phase, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very hopeful ending, in the sense of, you know, obviously you're at a crossroads by the end of the book, but you can see that there's a direction. I'm not going to give you any spoilers, people, because you have to read it for yourself. But, you know, it's very, very tactfully done. Now, in terms of the artwork itself, what was is it a couple of quick fire questions for you? What was your favorite place to go in Mexico?
I think the south of Mexico was always my favorite. The two states that I really loved are Chiapas and the Yucatan. The Chiapas is very jungly, and it's where a lot of the Mayan ruins are. In fact, the Mayan ruins continue all the way down through Central America. But Chiapas is full of jungle, and I love jungle kind of landscapes, so I loved that. And then the Yucatan is just really interesting culturally. It's kind of a really dry, arid place, a lot of it, and it certainly wasn't the season when I was there. But it has a lot of the archaeological sites again. So both of those were my favourites, I think.
So those are the ones you like visiting, but what was your favourite to draw?
I did enjoy all the jungle scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was worried at how time consuming that would be.
Yeah.
But actually it's just a lot of kind of like suggesting leafy shapes and kind of, you can do that quite quickly once you get the hang of it.
Yeah, once you get the rhythm, or like, you know, the sort of style of jungle that you're going for. And also, it can be quite therapeutic doing a similar sort of shape and structure, you know, a few times over a page, can't it?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you've read Untitled Apes Epic Adventure from Avery Hill
by
Steve Tillotson, which is brilliant. But I remember chatting to him before I started doing the artwork for my book, because he's got some jungle scenes at the end of that. And I said, God, that the jungle bit must have taken a while. And he said, no, the worst bit was he's got a little scene set in an office and he's drawing all those desks and seats and tables and things and getting the perspective. That's way harder than drawing a forest where you're just kind of suggesting leaves. And that made me feel a bit more confident about starting my jungle scene.
So you were more worried about the jungle than like drawing like certain parts of Mexico, because there's a lot of like village streets. There's a lot of perspective in your book. You know, it's very perspective heavy, isn't it, this book?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like a lot of people, vehicles and things are my nemesis. So I would be doing a lot of bus interiors, which are quite dull. So yeah, anything, and then streets, you kind of want to suggest that there are trucks and cars and things, but I just really didn't want to draw anything like that. Also at the beginning there's a Mexico City scene where I wanted to show the crazy traffic and that was a page that I dreaded for a long time.
even more so than trying to replicate those sort of Incan, those Mayan sort of ruins and sort of like the carvings and paintings that you see.
Yeah, all that stuff was really fun because it was such a passion of mine at the time. I loved finding out about all that stuff. Yeah. So that was really fun for me to draw.
Did you dig up a lot of reference or did you have photos of the time?
I didn't have a lot of photos. My photos from the time weren't very good. So I did a lot of before I started, I created a folder for every page of the book. And I downloaded JPEGs off the internet for a reference, and I had it all organized by page so that as I worked through it, I could just open up the folder and I would have a bunch of reference material ready.
Blimey. Well, you're a very organized person, as well I know, because we've been scheduling this appearance for a few weeks. So, she's far more organized than me, listeners. Trust me. She even had a calendar that she put this on.
I've got a calendar, yes.
Yes. Is that because, like, working with Avery Hill, does that, you know, having to deal with that sort of side of comics as well, the organisational bits, does that help when you're working, when you're doing your own work?
Yeah. I mean, I'm quite forgetful, so I have to write everything down if I'm not going to make a mess of things. So, yeah, I have to have everything written down. I have to have reminders on my phone set to go off at certain times and things. Yeah, I just have to be organised, otherwise I would be a mess. Yeah. But yeah, I was at one point, Avery Hill put me in charge of trying to keep things on track with, because now we work with distributors, our books have to be ready much further in advance than we were used to before. So having everything ready on time, that's a big challenge.
Yeah, but that sort of organisational aspect surely helps when you're planning a 240-plus page book, isn't it? You know, you must have...
Yeah.
Dare I say this, but did you have a spreadsheet for anything to do with the graphic novel?
I didn't. At one point, Ricky from Avery Hill tried to get me to do a spreadsheet. And then even he gave up on it after a while. it was just a kind of like a writing tool where you can kind of plan out the book and look at how many pages are on each section and things like that. And we both gave up on the spreadsheet.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of writers that use that sort of thing, and it's something I wouldn't mind trying at some point, because the organisational side must make it so much easier when writing scripts and stuff. But I guess, yeah, the artist in us just doesn't want to deal with spreadsheets. I deal with colour and shape, not numbers and boxes.
Yeah.
So, obviously, working with Avery Hill and stuff, you must see a few other sort of autobiographical books, and there's certainly, I saw a lot, I mean, going to Bristol Comic and Zine Fair, you know, there's a lot of autobiographical work out there.
Yeah.
This is your first proper stab at doing something autobiographical, isn't it? Is that right?
I mean, in my zines, I write a lot of autobio short stories, but they're very short little 2-page things usually. Yeah.
About looking out the window at cats and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which we can all relate to. But to take on like a longer form story is a completely different sort of mindset, isn't it?
Yeah.
What sort of tips would you give people who would want to write a more sort of personal work? Because I have no idea how to go about writing something, you know, like this. Not that I'd write something like this, but, you know what I mean? What were the learnings you took from doing this?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm the opposite in that I wish I could write, fiction and made up stories, but I find that a challenge. I don't know how people go about that at all.
Really?
And I find it really natural and easy to kind of remember a thing that happened and then turn it, and then almost without me trying, I kind of think of it how I would do it as a comic and think, how would I make this interesting? And, you know, but I did read a lot about writing autobio before I started, and lots of things like, because it can, autobiographical stuff can be a bit dull if it's not done well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like being told a really tedious anecdote by somebody.
Yes.
They don't have the way, you know, the way of telling the story to make it interesting. But yeah, a lot of the stuff I read was that kind of thing, was like, don't just say I did this, I went here, this happened. Think about an interesting angle to it, or think about not, yeah, that thing about not starting at the beginning, start in the middle and go back and jump forward and things.
You have to engage with a reader, don't you?
Yeah, you have to make it interesting. I guess that's something that I've got better at through the course of this, is thinking about it from the reader's point of view and going, okay, I might have found that very amusing at the time, but I don't know if it's going to translate necessarily to the reader. Maybe I should just get rid of it.
Hey, good comedy never dies. Come on. Have faith.
Yes, I don't know in terms of tips for people. To me, it's very natural to kind of want to tell stories of things that happen to me and make them kind of funny and interesting. But I think it's that thing of just not looking at it as a straightforward telling of this happened. It's just finding an interesting way to frame it, or to make it unexpected, to give it something that the reader's not expecting, maybe. I don't know.
Do you think it helps for if people are going to do stuff like this, to have a narrative endpoint to it, you know, to treat it rather than, you know, here was my day, I went shopping, this is what happened, sort of thing.
Yeah.
To treat it like a story, you know, have that sort of act structure and story, you know, because like you say, some of it can be very dry and doesn't connect with. I mean, we've all read them, people. Come on, we've picked up a comic and just sort of think, that's very nice, but what's the point of it? I hate to say that. But, you know, autobiographical can unfortunately fall into that trope like a lot more than other sort of genres, can't it? It has to be, you know, then there's so many great autobiographical books out there. And I think that the through point is that they've always got a journey. They're always going, they're always going to an end point. And when they end, you know, like your book, there's an ending, but there's a bigger world afterwards. We know it's almost like you step into someone's life for 100, you know, 80 pages or so, and then you step out again. You know, I always wonder about the mindset, though, because I wouldn't know. I mean, it's probably because I've got a very dull life, but but you know, I just wouldn't know how to go about it. You know, what makes for, because surely, I mean, autobiographical comics are probably more in your mindset, as you said then. But you've got this. You had this one story for Follow Me In that had this narrative structure. There's surely, you know, there's lots of other things as well that you can. Do you have anything coming up, you know, in the future?
I don't have anything specific yet. I thought once I finished drawing the book, and that it was kind of with the printer, I thought at that point I would have more time. But like I said, I've had a lot of promo stuff and a lot of Avery Hill work to kind of catch up on. So I haven't had time to really come up with a definite plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you made a good point about trying to tell a story that has a point and an end, a kind of conclusion to it or something. It is hard when you write about a real thing to give it an ending.
Or a very personal, because you're writing about you. At the end of the day, when all said and done, it's you, isn't it? That is this character. I know you said, when I've written the character of me, that's how you've treated it. But when all said and done, it is about you. So then there's also a danger that people will read this and then immediately think that they know you a lot more than they necessarily do. Have you had any experience with that yet?
I haven't had that really. I've had the strange thing of because I write a lot of autobio bits in my zines, and I've done 8 issues of my zine now, where I'll start telling someone something about myself, and they'll go, "Oh, I know, I read your you wrote about it in that," and then I think, "Oh yeah, I did, didn't I?"
That's the danger of being so personal with your books, isn't it? You forget that, But you in the comics is essentially you in real life, isn't it? You know, would you say that there's no caricature in any way going on?
No, not really. I don't think so. But I have done a lot of travel, and I've lived abroad, and I've had some interesting, weird jobs, so those kind of things lend themselves to kind of, if you can tell them right, to being kind of entertaining stories, I think.
Yeah Yeah. I mean, certainly just in this time on this Mexico trip, you went through a hell of a lot. And I'm not even going to go into the hospital trip. Oh, I just felt, yeah. I really felt for you then. So, yeah, that must be nice to revisit. Think, oh, yeah, remember that time when I was in hospital? That was,
yeah, that's still my one and only overnight stay in a hospital, thank goodness.
Really?
But, yeah, it was scary to be quite new in the country and not speak the language. And
yeah,
then be...
I can't imagine, yeah, I can't imagine it, you know, touch wood, that doesn't happen to any of us or you again. But yeah, I totally got that, you know, because you just don't know. It's scary, isn't it? You don't know what to do. Everything's a foreign language. Although you did squeeze out a bit of humour from those pages.
Yes.
when the nurse said, "Shit."
Yeah, it was such a memorable conversation because she had the odd word of English, and I could see her thinking for so long about how to phrase the question of whether I'd been to the bathroom or not. That was her way of asking me, was just that one word.
Yeah.
It was so funny because I could see her hesitating and thinking, can I say this? But when you have to communicate, you just have to do whatever you can, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in some ways, did you want to laugh at the time?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, hopefully that comes across a little bit. There's one little panel where the nurse sort of shoves a bedpan at me and Richard and I just look at each other and kind of laugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
There was some humour in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think every sort of full-length story definitely has to do a lot of different things. There has to be humour. There has to be, you know, even if there's darkness, no matter how dark you go, there's got to be a bit of levity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it helps to for the reader. But how is the... obviously, this is now out. So it launched at Thought Bubble. You've had a few sort of in-store signings and stuff like that, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
How has the reception been for it?
It's been really good. Yeah, I really love, you know, seeing occasionally people tweet or they Instagram that they've got the book in the post or whatever, or they've picked it up in a shop, and I love seeing that. It's just really nice. And also, it's been reassuring to me that people have told me that they've either read it in one sitting or that they sat down to kind of look at the first few pages and then found that they were halfway through the book suddenly, because I wanted it to have that appeal to the reader where you'd get really drawn in.
Mm.
I didn't want it to be a kind of boring informative book about Mexico.
Yeah.
I wanted it to have that page turning kind of feel, and so far from what people have told me, that has worked.
It totally does, because it certainly snuck up on me, because, you know, when I went to start the sort of hard copy book, you look at it, it's a thick book, you know, this is a bloody doorstop of a book, and when I started it, it was like, right, okay, this is going to take me, you know, a few nights to, you know, probably a week or so, and before you know it, you've chewed through half of the book, and you're like, bloody hell, you know.
Yeah. That's
how you know when you're in a book, isn't it, really, when time flies when you're having fun, as it were.
Yeah.
the same with any kind of book. But
yeah, also I had the worry that the fact pages, as I call them, that they would be kind of less interesting and that people would kind of skip them, and then I kind of thought, well, maybe that's okay, but maybe on the first reading people will read the story bit and then maybe they'll come back and read the other bits after. And most people have said to me, oh no, I just read through it and those bits were really interesting, and I was worried about whether they would be as engaging as the sort of comic parts of the narrative.
Because they're very much like they're almost like a tourist book themselves, aren't they? They're factual
sort of
pages.
But no one's told me that they skipped through those, which was one of my worries.
Yeah, yeah. And some of those are, you know, you talk about the history of the country and stuff. You know, it's not... When I talk about these pages, people, it's not like a picture of a pyramid and she says, this is Chichen Itza. No, you're getting backstory with it and you're getting lots of information, you know. So that they must have been quite fun to work on, though,
surely. Yeah, they were really fun. And it was hard, I think I mentioned earlier, it was hard deciding what to include and what not to, because there's so much I could have written about. It's such an interesting country with a rich history.
Yeah. Did you work on them after the story, though? I mean, at what point, or were you working sort of sequentially from page one to page 144?
I don't tend to work in order. I tend to just kind of skip around according to what I feel like working on. I'll feel like I've got a lot of energy today, I want to tackle a page like the Mexico City traffic jam that I've been dreading. I think I'm going to do that today because I feel up to it, and then I know tomorrow I'm going to be busy and I'll leave an easier page for tomorrow. So I jump around and do whatever kind of suits me at the time. So yeah. I actually did do quite a lot of those first because they were so fun. The pages with the archaeological sites and things, they were really fun to do. I did end up leaving quite a few with the colouring of the book. I left quite a few crowd scenes for the end, which was a mistake. I had quite a few days at the end of going, oh God.
Just more God. People.
That's always a problem. You kind of, when you're writing the script, you think, oh, this will be brilliant. I'll show just how crowded this street was. And then you come to it and think, no.
Yeah. Why do we do this to ourselves? We always like, oh yeah, this page looked fantastic. It's going to be a field of horses.
Yes. You have anything that you absolutely hate?
Oh, I mean, cars, obviously they're always a nightmare.
And
most of the time it's animals. Anything with four legs is tricky. I can draw a cartoon cat sitting down, but as soon as it's walking, I'm done.
Yeah.
But it does mean that when you draw these pages and they look all right, the sense of pride you get from them is like nothing else, isn't it? It's like, yes, thank God, I conquered my fear.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I always think that cows are really hard to draw as well.
They're very square. Yeah. It's just like a head on a rectangle.
Yeah, when you draw it, you see the photo, everything looks fine. You see one in real life, yeah, that makes sense. You try to do it on paper, even if you've done it exactly how the cow looks, it just doesn't look right, does it?
Yeah, they are very straight.
Oh, good. It's not just me. Thank God. speaking of your artwork, though, are you going to have any of these pages in the book? Right, and you do have some full page splash in here. Have you thought about having those as prints?
Yes, possibly, yeah. Yeah. I could do, yeah. I don't tend to sell a lot of prints. I've got a few prints in my online shop that are portraits of musicians and things, and they sell quite well. Mm. But kind of landscape ones, if they've got characters in them that are from a book or something, I don't find that they sell that well, because unless you know the book and you know the characters.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people are like, well, I don't know what that is. Yeah. Or I don't know. I think if it's just a landscape, maybe. I'll have to look through the book and see.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd definitely be interesting to see, you know, people that have read the book, if there's any, because you've got a lot of portrait full pages, haven't you? There's, I mean, one of the, my favourite page of the book is probably when you're both near a waterfall, and it's wordless, and it's just a full page splash. You know, that's just a gorgeous piece of work. And also the one that I love, although it's quite a sad page, is the spotlight on the dog drinking milk.
Oh, yeah.
I mean that breaks my heart, but at the same time, I kind of want to frame it and put it on my wall. I think that would definitely be interesting, though. Maybe do it, you know, for people, fans of the book, offer a small run of prints. I think there's definitely something you could do there, because
I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it goes beyond the book. Some of these pages, you know, to be in works. I mean, your sketchbook alone, Jesus. Yeah. Which you can see on YouTube once you finish this episode. So obviously you say you finished the book and then you've been on the promo tour for it. Like you're a band or something. The way I said that, you know, how's the tour going? And I know I've seen pictures of you. You had book plates, didn't you? Is that for page 45 that you were doing lots of book plates, or?
Traveling Man. The page 45 have a lot of signed copies with a little sketch in the front.
Yeah.
So if you ever go in there, that's a good place to grab one. Gosh Comics in London have some signed ones as well. Yeah, but I think Travelling Man was the only book plate I did.
Yeah. So how has the sort of store, I mean, I'm guessing they've been in store signings, haven't they?
Yeah.
What's that sort of process been like?
It's been nice. I shared both of my bookshop signings with Christina Bashinsky, whose book came out at the same time as mine. So we did it sort of joint ones in Leeds and in London. And I was quite glad to share it with her so that, you know, when you don't really the focus to be entirely on you.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about, you know, those kind of things where you have to be there in person. And I'm quite shy, so I'm not crazy about being in front of people.
Because the kind of the focus is on you in some ways, isn't it? Yeah. And I think that those two books, you know, Retrograde Orbit and Follow Me In, I mean, they're two of my favourite books that I've read in a long time. You know, there's a nice sort of, they work well together in some kind of way. Do you know what I mean? There's a real vibe about them that feels similar, even though yours is obviously about Mexico and the other one's about a planet in space.
Yeah, there are some kind of parallels in the stories, I think. Yeah.
Have you done many book signings, sort of store events before for any of your work?
No. I mean, occasionally we often have little things at Gosh. Like in the past, we've done some things for Small Press Day and things with Avery Hill that I've been involved with. But no, this was my first kind of signing like that. I did a talk at Thought Bubble as well, which was a challenge for me because I'm not good in front of an audience. but I got through it.
Yeah. I mean, was that your first sort of panel? You must have done panels before.
I've done a couple of panels, but I agreed to this one thinking it was a panel, and it turned out it was four of us, but we would each give a 10-minute talk. So
oh my God.
It wasn't what I thought when I agreed to it. And it was a PowerPoint as well, which I'd never done. So it's a lot of
oh my
fun
life. Had to talk about the book and sort of the journey of it?
Work in general. But yeah, that was also the very last hour of the last day of Thought Bubble, so I was absolutely exhausted, just barely able to speak. But at least we were all, you know, in the same boat.
On the same boat, yeah.
So we all just suffered through it together. I don't find those things easy at all, but I don't think you can turn down the chance to promote your work. And if someone's been kind enough to ask you, you just have to kind of get on with it.
Yeah.
Have you ever done anything like that?
I certainly haven't done a PowerPoint presentation.
Jesus. It's just a whole other thing to worry about while you're talking. God. You're thinking, when do I press the button?
Yeah. Or did someone sort of say, have you got your slides ready? Oh my God, that's not what you want to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, I can bullshit with the best of them, but... yeah. I mean, I've done panels before, like being on and sort of hosted a couple of panels. And much like doing sort of this show, they're nerve-wracking at first because you have an audience, but then when you start talking about the work, it kind of that melts away a little bit for me. Because once you start talking about the work and you've got like-minded people around you, it just goes backwards and forwards, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, did you have many questions thrown at you at sort of these events?
The last one, not particularly. I think everyone there was just so tired by the end.
Any questions? Is it over?
Yeah, can we go home? The main question everyone was thinking.
Yeah.
But in the past, yeah, I've done ones where there've been questions. But I'm much happier doing that sort of thing than just holding forth on a subject for 10 minutes. I'm happy to answer questions and things.
Because your work is so personal to you. You're going to get questions that are completely different than the, you know, how did you come up with this alien character? You know, how did you, have you always watched horror movies because of the monsters, blah, blah, blah. You're going to get fielded completely different questions than a lot of other people. Does that sort of play on your mind sometimes? Because you are literally now an open book in some ways to people, aren't you? Did you think about that when you sort of, with the work that you do?
I don't really worry about it too much. Yeah. Haven't ever been asked anything really awkward so far. So
give it time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I haven't asked anything too awkward tonight, have I? I just want to make sure.
Well, that's the thing, is that most, if it's an interviewer, most people are very sensible about what to.
You say most people. What are you trying to say, Kat? You say most people. Come on. I thought we were doing well. Come on.
Yourself included, of course.
All right. It's a bit late now.
But no, I have heard from other people that write about very personal stuff that they do have awkward moments, but I just haven't experienced that so far. But I think if you're going to put it out there, you have to be prepared to talk about it if someone wants to.
Yeah, totally. I was hoping you. That was exactly what I was going to say, actually. That if you're going to write about it, if you're going to be open about it, then people are going to ask you about it. You have to be prepared to talk about the thing that you've made a story about.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's too difficult for you to be asked questions about it, maybe don't necessarily write about it. That's an awkward thing to say, because when people make certain books, it can be quite therapeutic to get it on paper. But if people don't want to talk about it, should they print it? What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, there's a whole question of whether artists are sort of obligated to explain their work, because you sometimes hear that come up where, you know, a film director or something will just say, well, no, I don't have to explain to you what it's about.
Yeah.
It's up to you. Some people are very unwilling to talk about their work. But personally, I think if you've put it out into the realm, then you should probably be able to discuss it.
And certainly if you're looking to market it, to sell it, to, you know, because also, I hate to use this term, but it's a product. Everything that we're doing is a product, isn't it? To get in as many hands as we can possibly do. So if you're going to do that, then you're going to have to talk about it. You're going to have to, you know, spread the word about it.
I don't think I would feel awkward talking about any of the personal stuff in the book.
Well, good.
So hit me with your most embarrassing question.
Right, here we go. When you were in that hospital... No, I'm not going to go there. But knowing our listeners, just prepare yourself for any conventions that you may be doing in the near future. No, they're all lovely people. But speaking of conventions, though, obviously you did Thought Bubble. Do you get a chance to actually table at many shows?
I usually do a few a year.
Because you're London-based, aren't you? Are you London-based?
Yeah, that's right. I almost always do Thought Bubble. There's been the odd year that I've missed, but that one's always one of my best, just for sales and for... It's just always a lovely experience.
Yeah.
I did find that this time around, because I had a book out and it was such a big thing for me to be focused on, that I didn't have any time at all to go around and look and talk to people. A couple of people wanted to interview me at my table, and you never have any idea when they're going to appear. So I felt quite tied to my table. I ended up walking around for about 20 minutes just before the talk at the end. And that was my only time that I left my table, really. So it wasn't a very sociable one for me, this last one.
But you saved a lot of money.
I did. I didn't buy anything. I think I bought maybe one or two things. So I did save a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always some that are particularly good. I've tried a lot of different ones in the past, everything from zine fairs to kind of craft fairs even, because sometimes I sell prints and little badges and things as well.
Yeah, badges seem to be the flavour of the year, I think, especially enamel badges. I've seen them everywhere.
Yeah, I've got a few of those. Jumped on the bandwagon. I mean, I think as well there's something about if you're going around the festival as a punter, if you approach a table and they've got some small, cheap things, you're more comfortable looking, because you don't feel like, oh, if I don't want to, you know, if I like the stuff but I can't afford the book, maybe I'll just buy a small thing, and then you've got a memento and you can remember the creator and stuff for the future. But sometimes if they've just got a big stack of big books, you kind of think, I don't want to start browsing this, because then it's going to be awkward when I walk away. So I think sometimes having a range of different things, including some really cheap things, makes people feel comfortable to kind of look. That's my theory.
Oh, well, I mean, now, I mean, this is probably, this is your biggest piece of work to date, isn't it?
So yeah.
You've got a variety. You've got the zines that are available at like shows and on your shop and stuff. So you've got an even more variety of things to check out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So what, are you going to any conventions either end of this year or early next? Have you got anything else planned?
I haven't got anything lined up yet. I need to get organized. I don't like to do too many because I do find them very draining, especially the 2-day ones and even 3 days sometimes. So I tend to just stick to my few favorite ones.
Yeah.
And also if they're out of the city, I kind of have to drag my partner along and he's not always that keen. He's not a huge comics fan. So there's a lot that I've wanted to try outside of London, but I've just not really got around to it. I'm sure I will try more.
Do you think now that you've got like a more substantial piece of work with Follow Me and it's going to inspire you to maybe just push that boundary out a little bit more in terms of the cons you go to?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, people always recommend certain ones. There's a lot I want to try.
Awesome. Well, hopefully lots of our people will see you at a con very soon. This year or next. Who knows where you'll turn up? Especially now that you do store signings. Lord knows. You know. Do you have any more? I mean, what is the turnaround for something like that? Do you learn about it like a week before? Is it month? Is it planned months in advance?
It's planned a lot in advance. But that's also where my Avery Hill job kind of crosses over.
Yeah.
Because we've got a long-standing relationship with both Gosh and Orbital in London, we often work on, Ricky sets up events with them, but the Travelling Man one in Leeds, I did a lot of the organising of that and going back and forth with them about planning. But yeah, it has to be done in advance because the shop needs to order in, you know, enough stock, and they're often booked up months ahead as well. Gosh has something on every other day, it seems like, so you have to get in early and kind of discuss it with them ahead.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. So, but who knows where you'll be turning up next? And whether it be with this book or with Avery Hill in general, because you normally rock up to shows with them sometimes, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. Often I have my own table, but sometimes I'll help them out, or sometimes I'll be next to them.
Yeah, this has certainly been a busy year for Avery Hill.
Yeah,
and you've been working on a lot of releases, haven't you?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. That was a little, I mean, at my busiest point, trying to get the book coloured and finished, that was a little bit stressful because I still felt very responsible to my work with them and trying to keep on top of everything. So that was a lot. There were a few months that were quite intensive, but it's all worked out.
Hopefully it's all okay now, Kat. You're going to be fine. Everything's fine. You got your coffee. You got your weak lemon drink. You're okay. But interestingly, so like you've obviously had you've done the book, you've had the promo tour. You're now at that stage, you know, it's, things are starting to calm down now. Over the past couple of months, it must be really hectic for you.
Yeah.
So, at what stage is Kat Chapman at in terms of her work and going forward?
I'm at a stage of not knowing what on earth I'm doing next.
much like you were at the beginning of Follow Me In. So,
Come full circle.
so maybe this interview is the start of the next book. Who knows? Yeah. Look back in the next 10 years about how I put Kat into an existential crisis that she had to spend 300 pages dealing with.
Yeah, no, I would like to do another book, not quite as long. But the good thing about having done a really long one is that anything shorter will seem easier in the future.
Yeah.
But I
well, you say watch. That. Let's not. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you've already achieved something that a lot of people would love to be able to achieve. It's quite a substantial book, and I know all of us on this show like love it. It's one of our favorite books of the year. So, just top work all round. And I know a lot of our listeners have either bought it already, whether it be at Thought Bubble or online. So before we get your little recommendation for the listeners, where can people get Follow Me In?
You can get it from either my online shop, which you can find via my website, which is my name, katrinachapman.com. Katrina spelt with a K and an O, confusingly. But I'm sure Vince will put it in the notes.
I will indeed.
Also Avery Hill's website, you can get my book and a lot of other amazing comics there. And then, yeah, any bookshop that doesn't have it in already should be able to order it. So
awesome. Yeah. So you people have no excuse not to get it. Because trust me, I saw this book as a PDF and I immediately had to get the hard copy. And we were speaking briefly before we started this interview. Just the feel of reading a proper book like this, just it makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned that you found it quite different reading the book.
It's a different experience. I mean, for me personally, you know, I loved it, you know, reading the actual physical book. This is also with digital. This can sound really weird, and I hope you know where I'm coming from. But the paper smells gorgeous.
Yeah, it does. because when books are printed digitally, they don't really smell of anything. No. But when they're printed offset litho, it does have a very particular smell people really like.
I'm going to say it now, I'm a book huffer. And I want us all to unite to admit that we love the smell of books. Yeah. But apart from smelling great, this is a fantastic book as well. But what would you like to recommend, before we let you go, Kat, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners? Because we know, I mean, you read an awful lot of comics every year, don't you?
Yes, yeah, I do. I mean, interestingly, I've not read a huge amount this year because I do a lot. I deal with a lot of Avery Hill books, and so often it's a lot of work just getting through those. Not that it's a chore getting through them because they're all brilliant.
Yeah,
that sounded like it was a chore. No, they're all brilliant. But yeah, I've bought stuff at LCAF and at other events throughout the year that I've still not got around to reading. But I have read some great stuff. I would recommend anyone who doesn't have a huge budget to spend on books and comics, I would recommend they read On a Sunbeam by Tilly Walden, the webcomic, which is now out as an Avery Hill book in the UK and as a second book in the States. But she's left it up. It started as a webcomic. She's left it up online in its entirety. I think there are a few differences between the print version and the online version, but not many.
I think there's a lot to be said, though. I mean, if you've got a webcomic, I read a lot of webcomics, but if I love it so much, I'm going to double dip. I'm going to buy the printed book. You know, people want that sort of book on their shelves, don't they?
That's what she said. She was very adamant that she wanted the whole thing to be still available for free online. And she's just a genius. So yeah, that's a brilliant one. And it's a long, long book, so it will keep you going for a while. There's also a new webcomic that's just started that I'm quite excited about. I've heard a lot of people talking about it online, and it's by Sophie Yanow, who's an American comic artist, I think. I hope she's American. Not Canadian or something, but it's called The Contradictions, and it's just started, and she's, you know, posting those regularly now online, and it's at thecontradictions.com. But I've seen a lot of people, including Tilly, kind of talking about that on Twitter and things. Nice.
Is that a narrative sort of webcomic, or is it a like one and done each day sort of thing?
It's an ongoing narrative, so it's going to be interesting to see how it develops. And also I bought Hot Milk by Lucy Bryan. That was one of about two things I bought at Thought Bubble.
I'm guessing that's a book. You didn't just buy a cup of hot milk.
I didn't buy a cup of hot milk. She's a French comic artist, and it's sort of a collection of her online kind of diary comics and things that she's done over the last few years. But it's a really nice print edition, just collecting all her work into one book, and it's really she's really funny and really good. So that's one that I've enjoyed, and also lots of stuff from Shortbox. I don't know if you ever talk about Shortbox on the podcast.
We haven't yet on the show. I think Tony might have mentioned them once or twice, but
right. But they I think you could order anything from them and it would be brilliant. So that's a good thing to investigate if you haven't already.
Amazing. Amazing. So many recommendations there. Bloody hell.
Yeah. I prepared a list because I didn't want to be just going,
Yeah, I love it when the guests have a list. Plus, you know, I haven't had a chance to check out On a Sunbeam. I've been recommended that book so many times by so many people, so I need to get hold of that. But the other two I have not heard about. So that's always brilliant. So I'll definitely I'll definitely be checking those out. So where can people find you online?
Okay, I'll spell my name because it's confusing. So my website is katrinachapman.com, which is KatrinaChapman. And I'm Katrina Chapman on Instagram, Kat Chapman on Twitter. And that's about it, really. You can find my shop through my website.
And you can see Kat's brilliant Inktober, which is going until the end of the month. That's how these things go, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been enjoying that, actually. I didn't know if I would find it a real chore or whether it would be quite fun, and so far it's nice. But I have picked a month where I'm finally not too busy, so it's...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we'll all look forward to the rest of those. So thank you very much for joining us, Kat. You've been an absolute star, as always. You were one of our early episodes as well. I think episode 9 back in the day. Do you remember that?
Yeah, definitely. And again, that was... I did a sort of... short interview that was then put into the episode again, so it wasn't like the full experience. I'll have to come back another time.
Nothing can prepare you for the full experience of the awesome pod. But this was amazing. So go forth and buy our books, and thanks again, Kat. You've been brilliant.
Thanks very much.
So there you go, folks. That was
good.
An interview.
I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure I will be impressed tomorrow when I listen to it on my headphones.
Well, you'll be impressed with the stuff that Kat says, but me, it's just...
Don't do yourself down.
But I hate myself.
What have we talked about?
I'm sorry. but no.
Genuinely, get that book. Honestly, go out now. Order it, do it, steal it, whatever you're going to do.
Yeah. And I know when we announced that Kat was going to be on the show, there was a lot of people who responded and sort of said, I love that book.
Yeah,
So we hope you enjoyed that interview. And and if you haven't bought it yet, like Tony says, get it.
You should have, I went to the release party at Travelling Man in Leeds and it was really good.
Yeah, we talked a bit about that.
Oh, did you? Fucking busy, dear. Christ, that was busier than a lot of the other parties that are going on, dear, now. Yeah,
it's what we like to see. Lots of business going on in comics. But do we have any shout outs, Tony? I know you've got a few.
Really, the main one is, and it involves a lot of other stuff, is Nottingham Comic Con.
Yes.
This is a biggie for us, actually. It's one of our, we kind of have four or five a year that are big ones, aren't they? And this is one of them. It is also one of our chosen release points for the new series, for the new comic on Awesome Comics Anthology.
Indeed.
So, issue 3 with a cover by Ed Trequino continues the same madcap hilarity and sort of slightly bloodthirsty sexiness of our stories, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm pleased with it. Yours looks amazing, mate. I have to say, I really love that's my favourite bit of comic work you've done, that story.
Oh, thank
genuinely.
You,
I really, really like it. Real fucking action, bloodthirsty, and it's proper horror. It's not like these fucking, what's in the shadows? Or, you know, like... Do you know what I mean? All these horror films that sort of take a step back and don't go there. You properly go there in that. And that's what I like about it. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, good. Well, we hope that all you people that have read it so far have enjoyed Awesome Comics. And issue
we've got a few orders today, actually.
Yeah. Issue 3 is the strongest issue yet. So, you know, there's no diminishing returns here. We're just going stronger, harder, faster. in all seriousness, we're all very proud of every issue we do, but this one is no different. And we will be launching this October the 20th. So this is the last show before Nottingham Comic Con. So we hope to see some of you lovely people there if you can make it. Or if
come by the table just for a chat. Even if we've never met you, we really want to meet you. Yeah. If you are listening, then please do come say hello. We love to connect with people who listen to the show and we can have a chat and stuff. I really like that. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. And and also creators, if you listen to this show, you know, pop by, say hello, and you know, we'll try and get some interviews on the day.
I'm traveling up with Hamish Steele, so I'll probably do a little interview in the car with him.
Awesome. And my girlfriend Jo's going to be at the table as well. So,
legendary girlfriend Jo, as I like to refer to her.
Yes, the most patient person in the world. She has to put up with me. God bless her. But yeah, she's
and there's a couple. Go on, mate. Sorry, go on.
Well, I was just saying, she's going to be helping us out on the table. So
yeah, because I'm going to be on the no brow table, so we need a bit of help. So she's going to be about to help on there, which is very good of her. Unpaid, obviously, we're not paying her. I'll buy her a sandwich. That's it.
Well, you've said it. It's down in writing, essentially, now, isn't it? You're going to buy her a sandwich.
Verbally binding agreement.
Yeah, totally. Mm. But no, the convention itself is going to be an awesome day.
And there's a few other highlights. Yeah. Luke Pearson, the creator of Hilda. Not only a series of comics, not only a TV series, also now a novel series as well. Yeah. This is his only UK comic convention appearance. So get along. It's looking like we're sort of shaping the plans up a little bit, but it's looking like we're going to be doing a one-to-one interview with him in a panel room, which is going to be for kids, really, for kids to come along and have a chat with him, asking about Hilda. Everyone loves Hilda. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't love Hilda.
I
never watch kids' cartoons. I can't stand them normally, but I think this is like the nicest slice of like proper fresh storytelling you'll see for a while. Yeah, have you seen any of it yet, dude?
Yeah. Well, I'm a couple of episodes in. Absolutely love it, and it's been it's got season two confirmed. So,
brilliant. Which is really good news. There's Interspace, which is the Nottingham Comic Con anthology, which is getting released. It just kickstarted. They did a 2-week Kickstarter on it. Went very well. And it is getting if you haven't kickstarted it, if you didn't back it, then you can go on and grab a copy at the convention. It's going to be really good. So get on and have a look at that. CYN is being launched by me and Matt Harrower.
Yes. Now,
this has been a long time coming, but basically, if you go back and listen to our bad 90s comics episode, about a year and a half ago, I'm going to say, I'll get you the number of the show in a bit. But we talked about a character very similar to this, obviously copyright infringements aside. And somebody messaged, I can't remember who it was, who messaged the Facebook group and said, well, if there's ever two people who need to do a spin-off of this series, it's Matt and Tony. So we did a little sort of zine. So it's got a few articles on the 90s. It's got a comic strip, some pin-ups. A little commentary by me about why we thought we'd do it. And yeah, it was a real bit of fun that we did. Just a sort of photocopied comic, bit of fun. I absolutely loved doing it. And Matt's really kicked out of the park. And there's a samurai in it, which obviously I wrote for Matt because he loves samurais. That's good. And also, I'm in four comics, believe it or not. And the other one, I'm very briefly in because the Mighty Prolix uses the pages of page from Cockney Kung Fu, is Around the Block, which is Nick Prolix's new zine. It's got a cover which says Tree Hugger Meets Stick, and a sort of thinly veiled characterization of Nick being a sort of a scat jazz character on the cover. Yeah, it looks gorgeous. I read it this week and reviewed it on the blog, and it is very good. So have a look for that as well.
Awesome.
Anything else coming out at that event that you want to talk about?
I'm just looking forward to seeing all the stuff there.
Yeah.
if we can get away from our tables to buy anything, of course.
Yeah. That's turning into a slow story of never getting away from our tables these days, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thankfully these days you can get people's books from Etsy, their websites, etc.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe there's a Kickstarter. I mean, I've pledged to quite a few Kickstarters recently, and I have to stop and I've drawn the line at the last one, which is our final Halloween. Is
it our... Oh, yeah, we talked about it last week, didn't we?
Yeah. We'll put the link in the show notes for that. We've seen a bit of that, and oh my lord, you might be finding out more about that book in the very near future, maybe around Halloween time. Who knows?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, we do like to do a bit of a Halloween special. Well, I do.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So, we may have a... Maybe we've tapped one of the creators to be a guest on that show.
Why don't you just say it?
Basically, I asked Mike Garley if he wanted to be on. He said, yeah, all right. Yeah, but it's been a long time coming, but yeah, I might as well. I mean, who knows? Things could go wrong. Technical issues could arise, but
yeah,
for our Halloween special, the one and only Mike Garley is going to be on this show, and it's long overdue, and it's going to be a good one. So there you go.
Good.
I think that's it for the shout-outs, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't got any more, I think.
We just look forward to seeing you at Nottingham Comic Con. Cannot wait.
Although, bear in mind, issue 3 does get released at Nottingham. Don't worry, if you're not at Nottingham, you can get one at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is when it goes live. If you go to awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com, you can get a digital copy for £1.
Yeah.
Or if you're prepared to wait about 3 days, I'll get home and post a load out to you.
There you go.
So you can get a physical copy as well. So watch out for that.
Yes. Yeah. Cannot wait. And expect us to be pimping it a lot more on the next few days until the show.
So yeah, because we've got to pay for issue 4.
Indeed. Yeah. Dear God, do we. Dear God, do we. Anyway, but speaking of from good comics to even better comics, let's recommend stuff. Tony, what have you got?
Shall I go first?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've gone back to Fairspark Books, who, as we all know, are the spin-off company, the sort of brother company to Little Heroes, which is the best comics charity out there, let's face it.
Yeah.
It's the charity that gets comics in the hands of kids who are ill and in hospital.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rackley, who is our pal, and I often introduce him as my publisher, which makes me laugh and makes him just stare at me. I know Andy Hanks is doing it as well, because Andy and I are working on a comic. I don't know if we've told everyone in the world now, but working on a comic for Little Heroes. So we both refer to Aaron as our publisher, and Andy Hanks refers to me as his writer and his publisher whenever he's out with us. So that makes me laugh. But I'm going to talk about a series that is created by Rob Barnes, who's an American creator, who came to Little Heroes with some story ideas and with some comics called Gallant and Amos. Have you read these yet?
Oh, I haven't read these, but they look great.
They're so good. They're just straight out the gate really good. Sort of fully formed idea. They're 24 pages, full colour, £3 each. There's been 3 issues, I think I'm right in saying, and a 4th and a 5th definitely in the offing. Gallant is a sort of medieval knight stroke warrior, something in the line of Hagar the Horrible or Asterix or something like that. And his mate Amos is a bipedal dragon. So they're both... and they're also both smart alecks, and they are also, as I've written in my notes, ship magnets. So over the period of the first 3 issues, they get themselves just into sort of scrapes, really. That's the only way you can sort of describe it. They sort of wander around in the countryside. Amos is always hungry and is always looking for food. In the first issue, they come up against some sort of sentient snowmen and then some sort of Area 51-style aliens. In the second issue, Amos and Gallant go to a country inn called... let's say it's a similar name to a famous Golden Arches takeaway. He said, one of the phrases that made me laugh, he says, he who angers the waiter gets a surprise in his food. You know, but to be fair, I did find that quite funny, but they are sort of, they spend their life sort of bickering. Have you listened to the True Believers podcast? A bit like those two. A bit like Stuart and Andy. But they're like them. They are both funny as well. At the end of issue 2, you begin to see there's a sort of shadowy character who's following them around, and there's beginning to be a bit of an ongoing thread of story through it, which is good and really nice. It's got that sort of glint. I think it's got a little bit of Asterix in it, a little bit of the sort of just funny, not playing down to kids. It's consistent in tone, and the art's on occasion could do with a tiny bit of a polish, but it's pretty good. You know, it follows a through line. The colouring's really good, actually. It's consistent. The storytelling is really good. All the characters, you know exactly who you're looking at as you read it. And it's got a great little map in the back where you can see where they're travelling across the Great Desert and through the Formandale Plains and through the Melslin Lake. And all these got castles and monsters. And it's great fun. I highly recommend it. Go to Fairspark Books and you'll find a copy. And I'll just follow Little Heroes or Fairspark Books on Twitter and you'll get yourself a copy. I've just, although I get sent review copies of these digitally, I just felt that I needed books 1 to 3. So I sent off and bought them myself. And they appeared within like a day. Awesome. So very reliable delivery as well. But top stuff. He's good. He seems to be a really nice chat, Rob Barnes. I'm really impressed with what he's doing. And Aaron's making quite a name for himself as a publisher. He's got some really good stuff, including
Fairspark
my stuff.
Fairspark Books are definitely going to be one to watch out for.
I think so. Definitely. And they've got an Indiegogo to raise some money. So just get over to Twitter and pledge some money, because it is a great cause.
We're massive supporters really of that.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. That's my one. What about you, dude?
Mine, I've gone back to the well of what I picked up from Bristol Comic and Zine Fair.
Okay.
There's a little 24-page black and white comic I got called The Ink Witch, which is from Izzy Ward. You heard of Izzy Ward before?
I think you might have mentioned her before, have you?
Probably on when I was talking about that con, that was when I picked up her work first. Because it was my first sort of experience of her work. And she definitely works more in the sort of fantastical sort of area, from what I can tell. Like little books like, you know, and like Sarah Millman has these, you know, the fantasy and definitely all of those kind of sort of areas. And from what I can tell, Izzy brilliantly mixes those sort of fantastical elements with a real life sort of theme and sort of feel and atmosphere to it. Because The Ink Witch, which is about a sort of, it says on the back, it's a story of stumbling blocks, support networks, and the less than smooth road to love. It is set in this world that is about...
You've experienced that less than smooth road, haven't you?
Always, haven't we all? God, that could be a book, I tell you. But this book itself, I mean, on the back, it talks about how there's this... I mean, Izzy's clearly got this rich world, and this could be part of a bigger universe that happens in her other comics. But reading this, I didn't need to know any of that going into it, which I like. It wasn't until I read the back and thought, oh, maybe there's more to this. Because it, you know, in this city of like technomancers, which is like, it says high in the mountains below the Oread Pass, or just when you mention things like that, you can see that there's some massive world going on. And it's about a tattoo artist called Nyx, who basically, the tattoos that she does are sort of charmed tattoos that are sort of slightly magical and come to life. And she does that for trees whose the leaves fall off and stuff like that. You know, that's her day job. And she's already started this character called Bryn, like her sleeve tattoo. And obviously, those that have sleeve tattoos know that that's a lot of work, a lot of return visits. And these two characters sort of get closer together as the visits go on. Because Bryn clearly immediately is attracted to Nyx, but isn't sure, you know, she feels like it's reciprocated, but it's like an awkward, you know, should I say something, should I not say something?
It's like that woman I meet in the park.
Yes, and that could be any woman, by the way, or any park. But yeah, and this is very much, even though you have those fantastical elements of, like, you know, the tattoos, which is really nicely done, actually, you know, it glows and it moves. And Izzy's got a brilliant sort of, it seems like a sort of effortless line work, you know, it seems like brushwork. I don't know whether she works digitally or sort of actual sort of physical sort of inks. But, you know, this one, it's a character piece. Even though I've given you a bit about what that world is, there's not really anything to necessarily suggest that apart from the occasional hints of you know, the magic and stuff. It's definitely about two people slowly sort of coming together and like sort of falling. It's a love story about miscommunication or those awkward first moments. Okay. And it's just really, it's just got a real charm to it that I just really enjoyed. It's an A4 comic. It's all black and white. I can imagine that it could quite easily be full colour. I've seen some of her other work, which is full colour. And one of the things I quite like is she does text messages and sort of messaging quite well, because they're sort of texting on iPads and stuff at one point. And it's very simply done the way she does, like, you know, those sort of bubbles that when people are talking to each other, you know immediately how the conversation is moving. And yeah, it's just a real charming piece of work. Wonderful thing about those sort of shows is you can pick up something from a new creator that you don't know much about.
And, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think she's got other work, which I think this is a couple of years old. I don't want to say when the date of this was.
Is she a Bristol-based creator?
She is a Bristol-based creator. I think she's originally from Cornwall or Devon, I think.
This
one was her second comic, and it means just as much as the first.
Oh.
She's still tired and pining for Cornwall, but for the most part, she's happy. So it says in the back. but this was great. It's a wonderful sort of, you know, I took a punt on it, and now I'm going to be following this creator and seeing what other work they've got and like the other sort of stuff that they did.
Okay.
So definitely check it out. Go to follow her at Izzy Ward or you can go to www.izzy-illustrates.tumblr.com and just find out more. Definitely,
it shows the beauty of just taking a punt, doesn't it? What I did last week, wouldn't it, with that digital comic, and it turned out well. You've got to do it, And it's not, that's the reason it should be a disposable price. These comics should be cheap so that people can try them,
you know.
That's why I would see it,
And it was also another one of those, you know, the ones that I normally talk about is usually when I've had a good interaction with a creator as well. I picked
that's
up
true.
The book, chatted about her work, and immediately, because you know they were affable, it was like, right, okay, I'm going to try some of your work. I'll pick that one. And now I'm talking about it on the show.
I met Vince and Tony and Dan. They were quite sexy. I'll buy their book. That's how it works, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
But I don't think it's... I think it's more I felt sorry for them.
That's true. Mm. Pity buy. We'll take a buy. We'll take a few quid off you for a pity buy.
A pity pound. No, that doesn't sound right at all. But yeah, there you go. Obviously, we've talked a lot about comics. There's still going to be a lot of show notes because Kat had a lot of recommendations for you lovely listeners. She came prepared.
Oh, did she? Oh, yeah. Good. Good goodness. Yeah. She always has good ideas. Yeah, I love that little girl. I love Avery Hill, don't you? What a good bunch of people they are.
Yeah. Always good value for money. Always brilliant books. And we'll always be talking about them because they keep churning out more brilliant content.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
Be sure to check out.
When I saw Kat last time, I was saying to her, what's next? And she was saying, oh, I'm not really sure. And I said, why? Because she used to work in a theatre, didn't she? And I said, there's got to be a comic there somewhere.
Yeah.
Really got to hear about that. Because she's always got sort of funny stories about the you know, what's happened in the backstage of the theatre and stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. We'll see. Watch this space.
Maybe she'll do a book about Dan. His alter ego.
No, that's what we're going to be doing.
Oh, yeah. Brian Danger.
Brian Danger.
Dangerous Dan.
Yeah. We love you, Dan.
We do.
We love you. Anyway, right. And we hope you enjoyed this show.
We do.
Yeah. And
I feel like I've only been on 5 minutes. Normally, I'm usually ranting by now.
I know.
I've only just come on.
I know. But you've got a good hour and a half to listen to, Tony. Think about
that. I know. I have. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. It's going to be quite a long show, then, isn't it?
I think so. I think we're going to do all right. Sometimes it feels like I've been here forever, and yet it's only half an hour.
Sitting in this chair,
thinking, why don't
I'm in my little hotel room. It's one of these hotel rooms. I've got six little cartons of milk. 2 PG Tips tea bags and 3 biscuits. There you go. That's my evening ahead of me.
You are well posh.
I know.
Yeah. You don't drink normal tea, though, do you?
Oh, I do have tea, occasionally. Yeah.
Blimey. Yeah.
Now, here's a question for you, right? Okay, do you put the milk in first or do you put the tea in first?
I put the water in the tea bag and then...
That's because you're posh. You know, there's a history of this, don't you? You know that posh people, because they had better quality cups... could put the hot water in before they put the milk in. But poor people, because the cups fell apart, they'd have to put the milk in first because it made it cooler and thus didn't make the cup fall apart.
Well, all I know is... Shut up, Tony. I make a bloody good cup of tea. And the way I do it is tea bag, hot water, milk, sugar, bosh. You know what I mean?
My mate bought us a load of Cornish pasties up because I'm on this sort of conference thing. He bought me a vegan one as well. It's quite nice. And he comes from Cornwall. And what I do is whenever I see a Cornish pasty shop that's not in Cornwall, I take a picture of it and send it to him just to wind him up.
Amazing.
That's what friendship's about.
Yeah. Just think about that when you think, I want to be Tony's friend.
I will ruin you.
Yeah. he does, listeners. He does. And if you are friends with Tony and you just need someone to talk about it with, then you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I ain't lost it, never went away.
Yeah, you'll never lose it.
No. You can follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. We will be announcing some future guests and talking. You might see some photos of Nottingham Comic Con. Who knows?
You might do.
Who knows? You got some shows to look forward to, so stay tuned. And go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do group chats and stuff like that on Facebook, then go to Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook.
Yeah.
Loads of great conversation going on there. And yeah, thank you to anyone that contributes. Because I like reading.
Definitely, yeah, no, it's been really good recently. Yeah, there's loads of stuff on there.
So much stuff, yeah. So, yeah, and thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe. It just helps get the word out and more people listening to the show, which is what we want. And thank you. If you listen to us on Spotify, thank you very much as well. That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool, isn't it? Have we sold out? No, we'll never sell out.
No, never. Well, we'll never sell.
Very true. Very true. Oh, God. But you can find us at Nottingham Comic Con. And you can find us on networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Holiday Inn.
That was the saddest one yet. I just want to hug you right now. I may do when I see you soon in a few days.
Oh. And Joe.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet Joe. See her again. You'll never avoid me again, Joe. She keeps avoiding me, doesn't she?
I don't think she listens to the show, Dave. I wouldn't worry about that. although, let's try and get an interview with her. Not an interview, but...
Oh, I'd love that.
Let's
Partners of the Podsters.
Yeah. Even if it's just a little bit of audio of her saying, I am not talking to you.
Yeah. Tony, stop talking about me wearing your clothes that time. I'm never talking to you again.
Yes. Yeah. You never know what will be on the next show. But thank you for listening, folks. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
NeverOnAnything.blogspot.co.uk. There's been about 5 gone up this week. Biggest month ever on the blog. Thank you
awesome
very much
stuff,
to reading,
as always,
everyone.
Dude.
Thank you, man. SASEZOHYZ. Or I will be at the No Brow table. We have got, because they arrived yesterday, Hilda Dolls. We've probably got the last few left in the UK at the moment.
Oh, really?
Hilda Dolls.
I need to talk to you about that offer.
Yeah. I will do you a deal with a Hilda Doll and a couple of Hilda books if you come to my table. So, it's definitely, and you'll get them signed as well. But, cracking stuff. And they're all great value, the Hilda books. They're only £7 each. So when you think about that,
amazing,
you get
£7. Really? Yeah.
Good. Yeah, so come and see us and also come and get a copy of our comic. Go and visit Matt Harrower and go and meet the mighty Prolix because he's got some cracking stuff there.
Yes. You can see Dan at Vanguard Comic on Twitter.
Yes.
And go to vanguardcomic.com, which is flying high and doing well as always. And he'll be on the next show, folks. Don't worry.
He will. We miss him.
Yeah, everyone misses him. Everyone always asks about him. We're at a convention.
They do.
We just chop liver.
I know.
Yeah. But anyway, me and Tony are off to write that Brian Danger. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Kat again for joining us this week.
Yeah.
And from Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. Hope to see you at Nottingham Comic Con. But whatever you do, just read loads of cool comics.
Yeah.
Hope you have a great time. And as always, what do they do, Tony?
Oh, man. I knew you were going to do this to me.
Say it.
Stay awesome.
See? It can be trained.
I've broken it. Finally, I've done it.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. I've done a mess.
That was a case of like, he's not going to be able to get out of this one. Same as me and him. And the last line of the episode of Cat Chapman is, I've done a mess. I hope you're proud of yourself.
I am.
Oh, dear. Oh, you're like a ninja. Can't
I? I am.
Can't they?
As soon as Danger's around, my balls contract.
Oh, poof. My middle name's Danger.
Brian.
Brian Danger.
Let's do a comic called Brian Danger. Yes. And it'll all be about Dan and his many adventures.
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to write that.
Let's do it.
So I might touch the mic.
Oh, have you got a mic sort of dangling from your headphones?
Yeah, because I've just got normal headphones.
Probably, yeah, that's probably what
it is. Yeah. Well, cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Fucking hipster. Right, okay.
Okay.
Let's go.
Do you see that picture of a bum hole I just sent you?
Is that that pumpkin?
Yeah.
That's. I was just about to start the intro then.
I know.
Fucking unbelievable. You make me sick.